540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Breaking news out of the U.S. Senate on the debt ceiling bill.
On this vote, the yeas are 63, the nays are 36. The 60-vote threshold having been achieved, the bill is passed.
It comes as the U.S. tries to avoid a debt default on Monday. President Biden had urged the Senate to pass the bill quickly after it made it through the House last night, saying he wanted to quickly sign it. Gene Sperling, a key advisor on economics to President Biden, tells CBS News the debt ceiling and spending agreement is good for the country.
Compromises were made, but you know, we felt on our side that we did support the values that the president believes in and that this was not ideal, but an honorable bipartisan compromise.
When he got back to the White House from Colorado, President Biden shouted to reporters that he got sandbagged. It was his way of laughing off a fall he had taken on the stage at the Air Force Academy graduation. CBS's Ed O'Keefe in Iowa reports former President Trump was momentarily empathetic.
Well, I hope he wasn't hurt.
Former President Donald Trump expressed concern when told of his successor's fall and referenced his own experience after a commencement at West Point in 2020.
You got to be careful about that because you don't want that, even if you have to tiptoe down a ramp.
But he couldn't resist taking a shot at his once and possibly future opponent.
That's a bad place to fall when you're making, I think it was the Air Force Academy, right? He's making, that's not inspiring.
Unusually hot weather in portions of New England today, as Odyssey New York meteorologist Craig Allen reports.
During the mid and late day hours of Thursday, the thermometer was reading upper 80s to low 90s all the way on up through New England, New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, even into places like New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. It was in the upper 80s and low 90s.
Tomorrow is expected to be a scorcher from Kentucky up to Vermont. Police in Texas have arrested a man believed to be a serial killer. Reporter Chris Fox has more from Austin.
62-year-old Raul Mesa is being described by Texas law enforcement as the worst of the worst. Convicted of raping and murdering an 8-year-old in 1982, Mesa was released after serving only 11 years of a 30-year sentence. He's now admitted to Austin police to two recent murders, Detective Katie Connor.
We have between 8 and 10 cases that kind of fit the similar circumstances.
Mesa was taken into custody Monday, Deputy U.S. Marshal Brandon Fila.
He had a bag with him, contained zip ties, duct tape and a .22 caliber pistol.
Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
Dev Shaw, a 14-year-old from Largo, Florida, wins the Scripps National Spelling Bee on the word samophile. And recapping our top story, the U.S. averts a first-ever default. This is CBS News.
Sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Looking for a career path with flexibility, great pay, and benefits? Go to progressive.com/careers and apply online today.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group Wisconsin Breaking News today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. Saturdays and Sundays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays and Sundays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day $1 million advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. CivicMedia.us and sponsorship.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
people and works for the planet rather than one that just works for capital. So that's nice. What we're about.
Awesome. All right. So I guess when the government defines employment barriers, what does that mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, I suppose when the government defines it, you know, or when people think about it in their heads, it's the stuff that stands in the way of making work work for people. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we tend to think of like there's workers and there's not workers. But what there are is like a whole range of things that makes work possible. Right. So in a time when there are a lot of jobs, one of the things that happens is jobs get better. Right. To mm-hmm. attract people, to hold on to people. And we've watched that happen over the last year and a half in really dramatic ways, especially the bottom of the labor market. So jobs get better. That's one way that you kind of overcome barriers to work. Like if they pay more, someone who's facing high childcare costs suddenly sees that it's possible to work because the wage is higher, maybe. Right? Mm-hmm. So things are more fluid. Everybody is making decisions. Am I a worker? Am I not a worker? And they're making a decision on the basis of what does it take for me to get to that work site? So transportation can be really important. What do I get from that work site? Wages and schedules and benefits. And what's going on in my life or my community that needs my attention? My family, my kids. Or that the situation of getting care to this kid is so expensive, it makes me lose money when I go into work, right? All of these are kind of dynamic decisions. They're not a decision you make one day and then that's the truth for you always. You're always a worker, you're not a worker. Everyone is, you know, kind of, especially when you're close to the margins on these things, you got a little kid that's expensive, mm-hmm. like, and you kind of want to spend some time with the kids. So like, you know, you're kind of making these balancing questions. And so that's, I think I like people to think it's a sort of a little more fluid, this space. And one of the things that's really going on right now is jobs are getting better. That's good. But especially moms, because moms tend to carry the burden mm-hmm. of family care, especially lower wage workers with real transportation issues, especially folks who really need health insurance to be working. Our low wage jobs tend not to provide that. And yep. so, you know, these are folks who I think face barriers in this time.
Got it. We're talking to Laura Dresser, who's Associate Director of COWS, Center of Wisconsin Strategy. And so I feel like for the amount that we've talked about it on this show and the amount that I've read about it, and I am not an expert, but I'm very interested, I feel like our labor participation rate in Wisconsin tells two stories. On the one hand, we've talked about how our labor participation rate in Wisconsin for working age people is like the second highest in the country, which is great, right? So that proves that our unemployment rates are low. And also for the people who are of working age, a lot of them are working comparatively to other states. Simultaneously, that same measure of labor participation has been declining since like 1997. And so it feels like there's these two stories happening as far as like of like how many people are working. And so like what do you make of those two numbers, or what should we take away from that?
Okay. I'm going to do my big headline and then I'm going to just dive lightly into the weeds.
Okay.
But at the headline level, I think that the important thing to see is that Wisconsin is working. I think a year and a half ago, we had this like, everybody kind of bought into this great resignation story, mm-hmm. right? Oh, the pandemic supports were so generous and everybody realized they didn't really like work anyway. And so they're van life and GoFundMe. And this is what's happened to everybody. Nobody wants to work anymore. We sort of did this great resignation language. And that just wasn't true, right? People are working, like you said, we're working more, you know, about the level we were before the pandemic at this point. Wisconsin has always had a high labor force participation rate, especially it's driven by high rate labor force participation rates of women. Look at us. and so Wisconsin is still relatively high. and Wisconsin is working. And there isn't a story about creating laziness or being too generous with government programs to get people out of the labor market, which is, I think, what the Great Resignation tended to feed, especially on the conservative side, was this analysis that like people are taking advantage of all this generosity and they're getting lazy. And that's why we can't find workers. So that I set aside. Yeah. That is not true. We are working. But I think the other thing that's going on, and you mentioned this earlier, is we have a decline in the prime age population, 25 to 54. Just kissed that goodbye. So I'm sad that that's prime age. I know. I mean, I still am saying goodbye, prime age. Anyway, so we're declining. The baby boom is aging out. Mm-hmm. And as people get older, they're less likely to work. So the long-term, I saw a recent analysis, this is in the weeds, but a recent analysis of the kind of long-term decline in Wisconsin's labor force participation rate from the University of Wisconsin Extension had a deep dive into this. And I think their summary was that it is largely the result of the changing demographics that we see this decline. So still high labor force participation rates, but with an aging population, that's what describes it.
Yeah. Laura, speaking of an aging population, and I don't know if you looked at this particularly, but I think challenges for women over 50 are really, really real. And I was at one place for almost 25 years, a couple months before I turned 50, they let me go. And they say they want workers, but they certainly would like someone younger than you.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to, absolutely. Older workers who, and some workers stepped out because older workers were at greater threat during the pandemic, right? So that the health risk was higher. And so this stepping out, which was what people should do, especially in that intense shutdown year, and then coming back, finding a way in is really hard. And I think that's another place where you can kind of see the thinness of the claim that this is all just, we can't find anyone willing to work. There's deep questions about the quality of the job. And one of the things that makes older workers kind of harder to appeal to is they have wages that were better at one point, and they're not going to work for these really low wages. And so I think thinking about job quality in this question so centrally, like what are employers doing? What are they trying to drive through the wage strategies? And how does that impact, as like you're saying, Jane, the older workers?
And so I don't know if this is the most up-to-date stat, but there's somewhere around 100,000 open jobs in Wisconsin right now-ish. And would you agree with that, Laura? Is that the numbers?
Measuring open jobs is,
was kind of going to be my question. So it's like, if that is kind of the number that gets thrown out there right now, and we've covered the story before about like fake job openings that companies are now just putting stuff up there because they're always hiring, even though the job's not actually open. So there's that. But as far as, was there anything that came out of the most recent state of working Wisconsin that showed where the most vacancies are? Because we've talked about a nursing shortage, we've talked about a teacher shortage, the service industry is constantly struggling. So it's like, is there trends within that as far as, like we said, the jobs that are available, are they jobs that people actually want? Are they jobs that have a obstacle because of their higher education requirements? Or like, what trends are we seeing of the jobs that are open?
Yeah, I think so. One salient difference is the high turnover, especially the low wage service jobs. I feel like low wage service work, retail, hospitality, food and beverage, the whole kind of set of things around there. We have over the last 40 years, those jobs defining the bottom of the labor market have become harder and harder to sustain families on. They now offer very uneven hours, very low benefit packages, very low relative wages, especially as we've seen the minimum wage become less and less relevant, right? And so the best news in the last 2 years has been the high turnover that we have seen churning through that. That has lifted the floor on the lowest wages jobs. So that, and you all, I mean, listeners can see this in, you know, people advertising in service work at $15-16 an hour in the cities now, in Madison and Milwaukee. So that's one place where there's been a real change in the structure of pay. And I think a move towards greater hours of work, like more full-time jobs in those service jobs. There's shortages. So that's the, where the kind of formal and informal organizing of workers is changing what work looks like. Then of course there are these, you know, shortages for specific skills. And sometimes those skills take a while to get, right? So nursing is a perennial shortage where I think the question is really about, is it the quality of the job and the supports to the nurses, or is it really the supply? And I think there's a pretty strong argument, especially during the pandemic, that the demands on workers were really high. The rewards were low. The threat of health problems was high. And that made that job a harder job to fill, for sure. The system is responding with skills, but that's the way, I think that's one, that one.
Absolutely. Works. All right. Well, when we come back from the break, I'd love to talk about what policies you think would actually help with some of these obstacles and how that compares to maybe some of the policies that we're getting. Do those align? I'm going to say no, maybe not. But we're going to talk about that a little bit more when we come back. Our guest is Laura Dresser, who's the Associate Director of the Center of Wisconsin Strategy, also known as COWS. Stick around. This is Ask Coast Wisconsin.
Hard in the evening. Rest easy at night. Big balls, man. Big balls, man. Big balls, man. Can't you hear me when I call? I said you ain't so big, God, you just tall, that's all.
New Santa Fe. I met a cowboy riding the range one day, and as he jogged along, I heard him singing the most peculiar cowboy song. It was a ditty he learned in the city. Come a tie, yeah, come a tie, hippity, yeah, now get along.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair, and we are joined by Laura Dresser, who is the Associate Director of the Center of Wisconsin Strategy, also known as COWS. Is that why you picked that song,
Cow Jane? Cow Boogie. It's the Cow Cow Boogie by the Judds, man.
All right. Well, unfortunately, I know this is going to go too fast, and so we're going to have to have you back, Laura. But as far as addressing some of these obstacles, because the topic that we're talking about, if you're just joining us, is when we're talking about labor shortage, when we're talking about job openings, that there are other obstacles in the way of people who want to work but are choosing based on what their life is right now, that they either can't get there, they can't afford childcare, and there are all these different things that get in the way of them working. So what are some of the policies that could actually move the needle on this? And for the people who could be working but can't right now, could make them, what's the best way to say this? Like work for them. I think that was your words.
Yeah. Well, so the first one I'd like to, raise up is we had a lot of investment. The state really did a lot of critical investment into childcare infrastructure with federal money over the past, since the pandemic started. And childcare is a sector that is perennially stressed, but has been in crisis over the last 2 years. Center directors are having a hard time staying, keeping rooms open, hiring staff, facing, a hard time keeping people in the rooms and being able to take care of kids. And so childcare infrastructure needs investments. Childcare counts was the governor's proposed version of this, and right now sits at the side, as many things do, in the joint finance process. And I think Raising Wisconsin and other advocates have really been pushing for these investments in childcare in the infrastructure that allows mostly moms, but parents of little kids to work. And that's essential in this state if we're going to talk about labor supply and people working. So that's my first nominee is invest in childcare. A second one I want to point out is like a kind of pet peeve of mine. We're the only state, our borders with Michigan up at the UP and Minnesota and Illinois, all those states have higher minimum wages, and especially for tipped workers. So if you were going to be a tipped worker on one side of the Mississippi River or the other, if you're going to work in a restaurant and on the Minnesota side of the border, you get paid more than $10 an hour. On the Wisconsin side of the border, you get $2.30 an hour from your boss. Where do you go work? You go work on the Mississippi side of the border. So, I mean, on the Minnesota side of the river. And so, as we let the bottom fall out of our labor market by not attending the minimum wage, we are losing workers to this places where they can go for better wages. So that's another one for me. Those are maybe my
that one doesn't come up as much. Like, I know that our minimum wage and our sub-minimum wage for tipped workers is the federal minimum, and we haven't increased in a long time. But as far as the amount of people who potentially work in the service industry who look at that and are like, well, why would I? It's the same weather wherever I go. So I'm going to go where I'm going to get paid a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, Minnesota used to have, it's a smaller state than we are, but it's raised its labor force participation rates over time. This just sort of holds up like, what does it mean to reward work instead of to punish work, right?
Yeah.
And I think as a strategy, what we need to think is like make work appealing is how you get workers into the labor force. And I think, Medicaid expansion is another place where like I could, if I knew how health insurance was going to happen, I could put up with this job more easily. Like supporting people rather than acting like everybody's trying to get something for nothing is a way to kind of support the labor market.
And then the last one I want to make sure we touch on is transportation.
Yeah.
Because I was reading about this is, they're in the bigger cities, there's buses. But also, like, getting to and from suburbs in different parts of the, either Southeast and Milwaukee and all the suburbs down here, Fox Valley, Madison, and as they grow, potentially, And like I had a flashback to when I lived in the Bay Area and I took a shuttle down from San Francisco to Mountain View. And like that was a private shuttle, but like at least there was even an option to do that. Like I don't even think there's private companies that are offering to shuttle people around so you can actually get to your job.
Yeah, I think that the stuff about borders and transit systems in Wisconsin feels very rigid and inefficient and stuck in the past, mm-hmm. right? Like there's, you know, people need to move across city borders, you know, through the region. And just think about, for those of you who are from around Madison, just what a lift it was to extend Madison Metro outside city limits, like how much political work that takes. I mean, but that everybody moves across that border all the time. Right. It's
yeah.
fiction in a way. And but our structures and, you know, the structures of coordination on transportation and the lack of investment in it both really stand in the way of making systems that work for working people.
Well, any other closing thoughts on this topic, even though this is what you study all the time? So I'm sure you have lots to say.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm delighted to talk about this topic. Of course, I've been writing this State of Working Wisconsin for more than a quarter of a century. And the labor market right now is doing things for low-wage workers that it has not done since I've been writing that report. And
oh, wow.
I think we're so obsessed, I don't know, with weird inflation. I mean, I get inflation is hard and it's hard to carry, but a tight labor market moves power towards workers. It isn't just about unemployment. It's about how long the line is at the door. And I think seeing both, you know, that this is a good economy, it is good for workers, and it's been especially good for the workers that needed it the most. It's not enough, you know, but that's, I'm sort of like a little, that's a theme I always sound if you're going to give me.
No, time. Totally. And that's so interesting. That's interesting. So in 25 years, this is the yeah. best you've seen, like, as far as like conditions for workers?
Yeah, that kind of closing of the gap from the bottom to the middle to see the trends that we've seen in these last couple of years.
Well, there's some good news to end on, Laura
there
Dresser.
You go.
All right, well, we'll definitely have you back because this was super interesting and everything you study is stuff that I am super interested in. So thank you for spending time with us
awesome.
Today.
Thank you. Thanks for having
have
me.
Have a great day. All right. Well, when we come back after the news, we will talk to Paul Noonan for a sports update. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Rest on look away. He's what you call swinging half-breed, singing his cow-cow boogie in the strangest way. Come a tie, yeah. Come a tie, yippity, yeah.